It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another FYP midweek podcast with me, Jim Daly. Plenty to talk about again, as Palace have played twice since we last caught up with you, and the Palace women's team secured promotion to the WSL in front of a record Selhurst crowd on Sunday. We'll be quickly checking in on Jez Rakczaki, who has reminded Oliver Glasner of his abilities this week. We're asking if Glasner himself is maybe contemplating a career in the NBA coaching, and asking your questions and narrowing the field. We'll see about that in this week's 3-2-1. Joining me are two men definitely at the top of the waiting list for Joakim Andersen's coffee club. It's Joe Walker and Jack Pearce. Which of these two is most likely to bore me about coffee beans in a bar? I think it's Jack.
Probably a fairer shout, but I've got to say I'm not a coffee aficionado.
Neither am I.
Certainly wouldn't qualify for that club. Just the sheer reference to a coffee machine at the, was it the quote was about $3,500 or something? Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'll stick with my one button press Lavazza thing that I got given for Christmas a couple of years that I only know about 10% of its uses. So I'm gonna stick with that.
A $3,500 coffee machine actually makes coffee. For me, I'm expecting that to taste sort of, you know, unbelievable for that sort of money. But maybe it does. Hey, maybe it does.
I don't know. We're going to have to get Yoa or who are the other two? Joel Ward and Will Hughes, part of that coffee club.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting chat, I'm sure. But
The Joel Ward quotes I saw were so unbelievably specific. Yeah. I thought, oh my gosh, this isn't even a joke. I don't know about you guys. I'm in group chats that have names that go back to sort of 2009 that don't make sense anymore, and they are the sort of catalyst for the group essentially, but remain, they're not changed. I thought maybe that was the root cause of this, and then they asked Joe Ward about coffee and in the piece, and it was so deep. So I was like, oh no, this is really, there's no humor around this. They are really.
Oh, they're interested, John.
Yeah.
They are interested guys.
I'm thinking that when they hang up their boots, that's a potential pod series there. Joakim Andersen's Coffee Club with Ward and Hughes. I think that could be a...
I listen to a lot of football podcasts, but I'd probably give that one episode.
Sponsored by Lavazza.
Yeah.
Nice to see Joey get some acclaim in a GQ article, though. It's about time. We've been ringing that bell for a long time. It's about time the wider football community got an actual insight into what a man he is.
The most GQ of any Palace squad member, surely.
Possibly of all time, to be fair.
Possibly of all time.
Razor Ruddock.
That's men's health you're thinking of, Jack.
Oh, that's men's health, yes, of course. Living a good life now, Razor Ruddock. Living a good life, apparently.
Reformed, and we wish him well. Right. As ever, we're sponsored for this episode, as you have been all season, by our friends at Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final few games. Why, I hear you ask? Well, for one, you can watch every televised Palace game, along with delicious food and refreshing beverages, and with over 900 sports clubs dotted around the UK, Chances are you're within walking distance of your local Green King. And let's be honest, watching football is much better with friends and family. So get the squad together, whack it in the group chat, and get down your Green King for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. And that includes a title showdown that is actually probably going to go to the wire, the race for European qualification, and those final two remaining relegation places up for grabs. Don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Big shout out to our patrons this week for their generous support as ever. Lots of episodes this week if you're up for the patrons. If you time your free trial this week, then you've done very well. I think we've done about 8 or 9 episodes. And Rob and I are trying something extra special and new this week as well. And chat wrote the notes here. I am not talking about the Chelsea Sunday jingle.
I love it.
Which has had mixed reviews, Jack.
Well, fair enough. I mean, I think Ray Davis might be knocking at your door soon. I do think the Kinks are probably owed some money for that. But I get it. It's nice. I thought I'd pressed the wrong podcast when that started playing. I was like, yeah. What on earth is happening? But yeah, nicely done. Mix
I've got plans for an... I do have one for Mondays, which I haven't done yet because we haven't had a Monday. And I've actually now got plans for a theme tune that encapsulates every day of the week. And I'll leave it at that. I won't say any more. But okay, that we could play at any point.
We're trying to recruit more patrons, Jim. So, you know, keep it going, mate. Light and breezy. Light and breezy.
I've got to say that I hope the efforts are rewarded because I've noticed it's not just this coming week that we're in. The last sort of 10 days or so, there's been something almost every single day and all worthwhile listening. So the new dailies that have been trialed, I find it really useful, find it a lovely little pickup on the way home from work. So yeah, I've been enjoying it and I hope everyone else is. So hope your efforts are appreciated, Jamie. Well,
appreciate the feedback, mate. We are we're planning on trying to take everything to sort of to the next level throughout the summer and for next season. So yeah, and there's always plenty of stuff to talk about when it comes to Palace. So if that all sounds to your taking, go to patreon.com or patreon.com, patreon.com/FYP podcast. Link is in the show notes right now. Shout out for our new merch store as well, fypfanzine.myshopify.com. Link below again. Lots of new designs. I'm working with our designer on another new design as well, which we're sort of tinkering with at the moment, based around a certain player who's playing well. I'll leave it at that. So if you go to our store and enter launch 10, you get 10% off. Yeah.
It could be anyone.
So, and that's the beauty of what this last week has been. Two Palace games, fantastic 2-0 win over Newcastle last week, and a good looking point courtesy of another goal of the season contender at Craven Cottage. We'll come on to that later because that was a banger. We do normally bypass the first game when we have two games in a week because the second one's sort of fresher. But we have to, Jack, talk about that Newcastle game. A great win, fantastic performance. It had everything. How good were we? I saw a Newcastle fan today and he was saying how good we were. I know that Amanda Staveley was on the BBC's podcast.
Oh, the moral compass there is. What tell me what she said, Jim. Tell me.
She, without going down that road, was saying how good Palace were. We were great.
Exceptional performance from whistle one to the last blow of the whistle, to be honest. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The result was almost a positive aside, to be honest. If we'd been frustrated and it had gone to the close of play with a 0-0, you'd have been frustrated, but still so many positives to take. But the fact we were able to take the 3 points and JP added to his goals tally and the two goals were in front of the Holmesdale. Like, it's just everything that you really want from a midweek game at Selhurst. But yeah, every player had a really good night. Disappointing to see that Michael Olise wasn't in the starting lineup when I pulled up, but you understand why. And he did come on later on and featured, so clearly he's being managed in terms of his return from that latest injury. But just a great performance, really. The type of performance you want your team to deliver in the Premier League against, you know, I know Newcastle aren't flying at the levels they were this time last season, but in their last two league games, either side of the Palace game, they've scored 9 goals and we kept them at bay. I thought we, in large parts, kept Isak and Anthony Gordon very quiet to the point where Anthony Gordon was just winding himself up and lost the plot somewhat in that second half. But really, really good performance. probably the clean sheet that we deserved against West Ham, given the poor quality of the goals we conceded against them. So that was good to get a clean sheet over the line. But yeah, just a really enjoyable night. And you know, we've talked about it, and I've talked about it plenty of times over the last month or so, in that, you know, these are the rewards for sticking with the team over what have been, you know, tough winter months. And that was another one of them. And everyone that went on Wednesday night and everyone that watched and listened, duly rewarded for sticking with the team through thick and thin this season. Lovely performance and capped off by some lovely goals. I thought the first one in particular was a brilliant goal, and I haven't enjoyed a goal as much as that in front of the hotel for a long time. I love the 1-2 and just the type of football you only score when you're playing with high confidence. So, yeah, fantastic night and fantastic performance.
Joe, I had one of those moments. I was watching at home because I had to do the kids' bedtime, and I didn't get to watch it. And I was doing that classic thing where you're watching on a stream, and then I'd forgotten to turn the notification on live score off.
No.
So I got the pop up that it came up, there was a goal, but I didn't. My stream was so far behind. My wife walked in, I said, "We're going to score a goal," and she stood there for like 2 minutes. So I was so far behind. But even when the goal came, I actually had no idea what was going to happen. It was so enjoyable to watch because it was such a lovely little 1-2. It didn't matter that I knew it was coming. In fact, it weirdly made it better because I had the suspense of something's going to happen. And then I had the enjoyment of that moment of, oh, that's a really, really lovely goal. It was just that goal in particular, but also the performance in general, was just very grown up. It felt like a very grown up professional Palace performance against a good opponent who, albeit away from home, are not the same beast as they are at home. But that goal was the sort of goal that you score when you've been in the Premier League for 10 years. You know, it was just lovely. It was just very, it's a very wholesome performance and goal.
Wholesome, certainly, particularly in response to some Newcastle United behaviour that I really successfully got under my skin. I don't know about the players and the staff. It really, more than I've been called season, an opposing side has come to sell us and conducted themselves in a bit of a needlessly, just distasteful way. I think because in the build-up to that goal, Harvey Barnes goes down in really embarrassing fashion. I think Bruno had stayed down after kind of a 50-50 challenge earlier in the game, and eventually the ref has blown to stop play while we're in possession. Harvey Barnes attempted that again, and this time the referee just said, no. And then from that passage of play, we keep possession for quite some time, actually, but then it then leads to that goal. And that just made it feel extra sweet for me. Sometimes football, it's as much about beating the other side as it is just what you're achieving yourself. And I found a lot of my celebrations were throwing arms and fingers towards Harvey Barnes in that situation, which, you know, gets a few turns and looks in the main stand, as you know. just a thoroughly enjoyable goal and general performance, actually. Seeing I think we're all getting caught up at the moment in, isn't it fun? We're gonna turn up today and see Ebbs and Michael and Mateta together again. And we've actually not had a lot of that really together. The players have been very carefully managed. I guess we've got the room and now we're safe. But even before, we had a bit of a cushion to not need to risk them. So there was a little bit of disappointment in, Michael, at least they're not starting. How's that going to affect the confident way that we have been playing and seeing teams out? I thought we still had that same intensity and intention. You could see the output was slightly lower, the cutting edge, let's say, which is that's not a thing to, it's not a stick to beat Jordan Ayew over the head with. It's just, even he will probably tell you, I'm not as good as Michael Olise breaking up a defence. But it was still enough. And then that goal's a great example of it. One of the most nonchalant 1-2s I've ever seen. I didn't even look like he celebrated the goal. It was so amusing. It was classic him. But there's a nice shot where Ayew played the 1-2 and he's almost started walking off as if it's been given offside. Ebbs has got his arms in the air already, sort of celebrating the goal. And yeah, it's unusual to have. And Mateta being put through on goal and me in the stand thinking, oh, he's putting this away. Like that's new.
Yeah,
It's that's
such where, a good finish. Yeah.
That's where we are now. And it's nice, just really enjoyable football against a team that is a very good team. There's a few names that will probably come up more than once today. I think Wharton's performance against Bruno Guimarães, who will go on to bigger and better things, and he might unfortunately have Adam Water beside him in those wherever he's going, like, really stood up to that battle incredibly, given that was probably his 12th, 13th game in the Premier League. Just extraordinary. And we said the genie was out of the bottle after the Liverpool game.
Yeah, we need to shut up. We need to put it back in the bottle, mate.
I think if not that, the Fulham performance seems to have really grabbed the eyes of the country. It's isn't that fun? Do you know what? I love having players like in that kind of form playing for my club. It's brilliant.
If we're focusing on the Newcastle game just for a moment, though, I'm sure he will be part of the discussion later on, but Will Hughes' performance last Wednesday night was...
My man of the match.
Yeah, he was my man of the match. I know JP got the two goals, but everything about Will Hughes last Wednesday was great. He was doing his typical kind of rabid dog impression, but also his calmness on the ball, his ability to kind of bring others into play. Weight of pass is always nice. And actually capped it off with an assist. So, like, he added to every facet of our game as well. And we've talked about it previously over the last few weeks, particularly while Wharton's genie has emerged from the bottle. I think Will Hughes is doing a lot of good work with him as well. And I don't know if Wharton would be looking as good as he is right now if he didn't have that kind of countermeasure of Will Hughes next to him. But it's nice to see Will Hughes get some praise because he often was the fall guy towards the end of Roy's spell. Put the pound in the meter, Jim. But in terms of outstanding performances last week, you've got to mention Will Hughes. Well, Chris Richards had another good game. There wasn't really a bad player. Munoz, I thought, was all over the place, but in a good way. Really good. Very enjoyable night. But I agree with Joe wholeheartedly in terms of Newcastle's dark arts. Martin Dubravka looking to waste time within the first 15 minutes, I think. Like, they knew they were up against it. Just how often we were winning the ball in there on a defensive third. I know we didn't do a whole lot with that, but we were on it from whistle one, and it was a great night.
That kind of approach is going to stand us in good stead against anybody, even when the kind of real hit makers in the team, if one is missing or two are missing. I think that's kind of one of the big differences you're looking at now as we're getting into several weeks of Oliver Glasner, is that even with Ayew up top, Ayew in the free, and Will Hughes in midfield, the pressure that we're putting on sides, we might be tired later on, but it's just keeping teams on the back foot, and they do not know how to react to that start. There's not one side has responded positively to our approach at the start of games since he's come in, which is really telling. And then what was quite surprising was that we were then able to actually maintain that, withhold some pressure, which will come, but to finish the game as strongly as we did, it's just made it extra, extra special, really. I didn't expect... That was the real kind of sign that we are kicking on from wherever we were a month ago.
Jim, you probably had the better angle, given Joe and I were in the ground at the other end of the stadium, but heart in mouth with the penalty. I haven't really seen it back, actually, myself. But with Hughes, what did you think watching it live?
I thought it was a penalty. Mm. I can see why they didn't give it, and I haven't heard the official reason, but I think it's probably because he takes an extra step after the tug. And so when I saw it, I said this on the post-match pod, there was another decision with a different team a week before or so, and they'd said because he took a step, the tug or whatever wasn't enough to make him go down, and that's why it wasn't given. And I suspect it was kind of the same, but it was definitely anywhere on the pitch is getting given. And if it had been on Elise or Ebs down the other end, I think we'd be probably quite disappointed not to get it. But that's the way things go, you know. And it's just, I thought we were good. We were still good for the win, you know. I think we didn't ride our luck.
It's nice to get that second.
Yeah, it was. It's 3-2-1 is gonna be really hard this week.
Yeah,
really hard.
Yeah, maybe 6-5-4-3-2-1.
We might have to. Just on Ayew, Graham Cook has also recognised Ayew's lack of celebration. Just how good was Ayew's immediate reaction after his through ball to JP for the first against Newcastle? He looked like someone just told him that he's got to pay an extra like 50k in tax or something. He just looked so...
parking ticket vibes, that was.
Yeah, it was. Graham's put hashtag swagger. It's quite a strong swagger, Jack, isn't it? Just to be like, yeah, that's what I do, nonchalant one-touch pass.
The only time he looked more livid is when his number came up, and that was about as grumpy a substitution walk-off as I've seen. Even though he's on a yellow card, and it was Michael Olise who was coming on. He did not look happy his number had come. I think he appreciates that when Olise is fit, his minutes are going to be limited, so he wants to make the most of every minute he has on the pitch. But he did. He got the assist, and it was the breakthrough, and thought he did well. Like, did exactly what Jordan Ayew does, but yeah, his role is going to be an interesting one. I know we've had a couple of questions about what the future holds for Michael Olise, as we're having every week, but be interested to see how Oliver Glasner manages Jordan Ayew, because you have to presume, and it'd be right to presume, that we'll see less of Jordan Ayew provided the stars are fit.
Yeah, I think that he's not as much of... He was more of a Hodgson player than... Oh, I've done it as well. Then I think he is a Glasner player. But Ayew has surprised us before many times, so I certainly wouldn't write off Jordan Ayew. On Adam Wharton, he's only just turned 20 in February. Yeah. He only made his debut for Blackburn 18 months ago. It's insane the speed at which he has become a Premier League footballer, and a very good one already, 12 games in. He looks like he's been playing for years. When I was 20, I was at university playing copious amounts of Football Manager and doing... I mean, we are worlds apart, me and Adam Wharton, not that anyone thought differently.
Breaking news, listener.
It's just... Yeah, and you guys are right about the genie's out of the bottle, but to be honest, if that means that we end up selling him, I mean, you know, it could be as quick as a year down the line for a triple what we bought him, then that is our model, and that's, you know, that's the kind of the way it goes.
I mean, Joe was there on Saturday. He'll go into detail about how good he was in the flesh, but just listen to it on BBC Radio, and then I watched the extended highlights, and it's just a lovely player that we've got really cheaply for 18.5 million. To say that, it does look a bargain. And I tweeted after the game, and I think it's a point we've made over the last few weeks as well. You'd presume that Lee Carsley brought him into the under-21s, therefore he's kind of on that long list of England players. I really wouldn't be surprised if Gareth Southgate takes... And when I tweeted this, other people just said, well, we've got other players as well. But I think Gareth Southgate may well come and see Adam Wharton between now and the end of the season. I think it's probably too late for him to make that push into the squad. Listener of Joe's other podcast will know Jordan Henderson's already on that plane going to Germany. But I think the adapting to the league as quickly as he's done will only impress people like Gareth Southgate. And I think he'll get an England call up by the end of this calendar year, for sure.
Yeah. I live in hope, Jack. I'm thinking Monday, 8th of May, 6th of May.
This coming Monday.
Yes.
Monday the 6th, my man. Yeah, Monday the 6th.
Crystal Palace v Manchester United on a bank holiday. What's Gareth doing on a bank holiday? Nothing. Come down to the spot. And it will be, come down, see your old mate Steve Parrish, and have a watch of Cobby Mainoo versus Adam Wharton. And I'll tell you who's winning.
Shoot out.
I'll tell you who's winning that. I'm going to ruin that game already and make a big balls out for this. I think I've never been more confident that we're going to give them a game than I think I've ever felt going into a game against Manchester United.
That high press that we showed against Newcastle last week, that is their worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Casemiro at centre-half.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is their absolute nightmare. Yeah.
We got our best foot forward in the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. We evidently needed the rest after Fulham, and we'll probably get into that. But I'm rubbing my hands for that game, honestly.
Yeah, I can see it. And since that game on Saturday, a lot of people have been highlighting the kind of underlying stats, as they're referred to, in terms of Wharton versus Mainoo. Mm. And Mainoo is a wonderful player.
Yes.
But Wharton's numbers are comparable, if not exceeding Mainoo's in some regards. So who knows? I am more hopeful of him getting a call up before the end of this calendar year. And who knows that? We've got the Nations League, like Ireland and Greece, I think, in October, November time.
Yeah.
I could see him coming on for 20 minutes at the end of one of them. But... Yeah. 26-man squad.
Stranger things have happened, haven't they? Mm. Speaking of, I mean, we'll come on to Man United, Joe, and you're right. I think that could be... United have quite a soft underbelly at the moment, so I think actually that approach could be
One of the most entertaining teams in the league, their manager says.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, but he was one of the most entertaining and dynamic teams.
Dynamic team.
But again, it was in evidence again at Fulham. Palace, fantastic for the first half an hour. And I watched our friends at the Fulhamish podcast talk about it. And they couldn't believe that we hadn't scored. They were like, this is we were very lucky to get away with that. It was another case of Palace coming out of the blocks. And I know obviously it's third game in a week, Joe, so there was obviously tired legs later on. But it was a fantastic, fantastic first half, broken up really only by that quote-unquote injury to Leno, which obviously then gave them a chance to, you know, to change things about. But that, again, that Palace on the front foot, my God, they are entertaining, aren't they?
Yeah, it's confidence of everybody to do it. It has to be a collective effort, sort of covering behind. There was maybe one half scare, I think, when Munoz had an interesting battle with Joachim Andersen, which had always felt like it was on the halfway line, but there was very little behind them if lost that duel. But that's the kind of risk that you're willing to take and have to take if you're going to do that. We were snatching everything off them. Hughes and Wharton really having a good time, but also Munoz just trying to get in behind all the time. Klein supporting him really well. Tyrant Mitchell, again, heat map is so far up the pitch. What you would call nosebleed territory for him probably early in the season. It's just now that's where he occupies the pitch in most of the games now. And we should have been ahead. I think the Michael Olise chance I think it didn't get much of a reaction. It got such a shock reaction in the away end. It was almost, some sort of optical illusion. Maybe it was way more difficult than it looked from here. Because how did that not go in? But there was this reassurance that, more are coming. And it didn't quite work out like that. As you say, we tired a little bit. They needed that intervention, that break, and looked slightly better for it. But in terms of controlling play and keeping pressure on the other team, it was a masterclass. I was really enjoying it. And I know that the stakes are reducing now, particularly by the time we got to that game. But it was really nice to just see a contest like that. And us just playing so freely and enjoyably that even though we didn't win, I think most fans, there'd have been a disappointment that we didn't win it. There would have been slightly more disappointment that we didn't even draw it as the final minutes were approaching. Because I think that would have been incredibly harsh, as much as Fulham did get back into it. But we looked knackered. And I think there was an appreciation generally from those around me that we gave it a really good go and it was just very unlucky. I thought there were parallels, big parallels to the Bournemouth fixture, actually, in terms of, because we started that quite well and tired. And that second, the two second halves were very comparable. What I'd call walking football, you know, those Barclays adverts that would occasionally show the walking football programs with the old guys. That's what we looked like. It was almost netball rules, you know, you can't move with the ball. So take a touch, pass it. Towards the end, we were very static. And the changes in the end did enough because it was one of the substitutes that scores an incredible goal. An absolutely incredible goal. And I think it was nice, not just for Jeff, but the team, for the first half efforts especially, that they, and even, you know, as tired as we were in the second half, still continue to try to break and create things, even with a little bit more sluggishness, let's say, slightly more tired legs. Still we're trying, and we got our rewards for it, so that was nice.
Jack, I'll let you wax lyrical about the Schlupp goal, because it is an absolute banger. I mean, it's insane. But that's two games in a row now where Palace have scored late on, 88th minute against Newcastle, 87th against Fulham. Bucking a trend, I'd say, of conceding. You know, we spent a long time having this run where we're conceding in the last 5, 10, 15 minutes and we weren't able to get back in games. We've turned the tables now, and I think that's very encouraging as well. And it would have been a travesty not to have got a point out of that Fulham game.
Yeah,
especially given the tired legs. But I think that's a pleasing aspect, I think, of things, the turnaround under Glasner so far.
Yeah, I mean, and Joe just mentioned the Bournemouth game. We really wilted in the last 20 minutes of that game, offered very little threat. And to think that was the same month as this, it's quite crazy, really. But it is good. It's nice to have that turnaround. As I said, it was nice to get that second goal against Newcastle, but that capped off the victory. Whereas, you know, Saturday, that goal sees us actually gain a worthy point. I mean, as you both say, we were totally worth that point at the very least. But what a goal to get it. Like, I'll quote Tony Gale from the World Feed, whack. That was how he described it. And I think
that's the longest word Tony Gale knows.
That's Tony. Yeah, he's gone to his thesaurus for that one. But brilliant. Fantastic. Please for Jeff. We've talked previously about his kind of instinct in the final third. He hits the ball early and hits the ball hard. I don't think he scored as good a goal as that. That's absolutely top draw. It just adds to the long list of goal of the season contenders, which I think the club released today. So delighted for Jeff. He's had a tough season. He's suffered with injuries and his fitness, become the, you know, the full guy for more Palace fans than Will Hughes was, as I referred to earlier. He has been the guy. I'll own it. I've criticised him numerous times this season. He's just not been at it. But to see him pull that out of the bag on Saturday was great. I think he was surprised anyway. Lovely interview with him and Chris Grierson after the game where he sees the goal back and he's just like, well, that is pretty good, actually. It's quite nice to see the mask slip from a professional footballer, to actually see them accept what an amazing feat scoring such a goal is. Often we see it with Ebbs and Michael Olise all the time in terms of how cool, and it's just the expectation is they're going to score goals as good as that. But to see Jeffrey Shupp actually be surprised at the replay of the goal was really quite charming. Chuff for him, chuff for the away support that followed on Saturday, and chuff for all of us, really. It's nice to extend that unbeaten run to four games. And it wasn't a game that we deserved to lose. So, yeah, really pleased we grabbed something from it.
There was a quite a funny moment at full time as well, where players and staff sort of applauding the away end and vice versa. And there were attempts by at least three players at separate occasions to push Schlupp towards the crowd and take his moment as if people were leaving. And he kind of refused to. He was a bit shy about it. Maybe it is because he just didn't quite know the extent of how good the goal was, or perhaps, maybe he's not as happy with us and some of the treatment he's got that he's willing to kind of walk back.
That's a fair shout, yeah.
He's like, have that for winners and losers last year.
Yes, yeah. But it also shows, I think, some of the... Don't over-egg team spirit too much, but, I mean, there's been hints from... It sounds like Jeffrey Schlupp's had some things that have occupied him over the last season or two off the pitch that is none of our business, especially because I don't know it. But it's been hinted at, and you know, it seems like there's some people in the squad looking out for him and being as happy, you know, pleased for him in that moment, in what may well be one of his last appearances for the club. You know, it's a That's been an interesting conversation that's come from the recent successes. Actually, suddenly a lot of the players that were bit part a month ago are now looking like they've played their way into new deals, but Schlupp might not necessarily be one of those. And it's a nice, if that is his sort of sign off, it's a lovely one.
Now about Jeffrey Schlupp, the one thing I realise with Jeffrey Schlupp is whether he starts a game, finishes a game, come the end of the match where the opponent and Palace are going around shaking each other's hands, having a chat, he seems to be universally like Jeffrey Schlupp.
Yeah.
Like every player and he's been around in the Premier League now for a long, long time, 10 years plus with Leicester. I think it's 10 years since Leicester came up and Schlupp was part of that team.
He's our fourth highest Premier League appearance holder, by the way.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean,
in the current squad or of all time?
No, of all time Palace players in the Premier League. Yeah.
So Wilf, Macca, Ward.
Ward, and then him.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
just pleased for it. That kind of goal, you just got to be pleased for the bloke, and everything else that came with it in terms of a point for Palace is great and lovely. But I think most Palace fans are just pleased for Jeff Schlupp, really, for that goal.
I think he seems like a really humble guy. He just seems like a nice guy. That interview with Greer was really nice. I'm watching the goal of the season video they've put out on Twitter. It's 5 minutes long. That's so really good. I really like that they include the women's and the youth teams as well, and there's some bangers there. But my God, I'd forgotten about Jordan and I using it twice. I'd forgotten about Elise's goal at Luton. This is easily the best collection of Palace goals.
Jordan and I, what's that? Goodison Park
and Spurs.
And Spurs, the consolation.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There are a lot of consolation goals in that, or goals in defeats, which I hope don't count against some of the quality of those goals. Like, because it's just in that great. Kind of season.
No one was thinking that, Joe. You're the one saying it, mate. So
there's a couple of really nice Jesse Derry goals. Hopcroft's goal for the Palace women is there from the other week against Lewis, and then Schlupp says, "Oh my God, hey guys, that is a 5 minutes well spent." Honestly, do go and watch that. James Mark Wright has had a cheeky question. It'll be tough to see him go, but should we entertain offers of 60 million for Schlupp in the summer? Probably even a bit more than that, Jack, I'd imagine. Probably added another zero.
Priceless. Is he out of contract then, Joe?
I believe so. Well, it's one of those kind of... There's been... So I think Matt Wisdom's posted for The Athletic and looking at the sort of the outgoings potentially at the end of the season. And I think Schlupp seemed to be the one he was least confident on of the current retained players. That
interesting.
Whereas there's been a lot of positive reports about Klein and Hughes and Joel Ward, in fact, but not Schlupp wasn't necessarily included in that, which I thought was interesting. He's been here a long time. But yeah, I pulled that list up again just to make sure I'm not talking out my backside. Yeah, fourth, 206 Premier League appearances for Palace.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And 7 years here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some great moments as well.
Yeah. Like a JP has a collection of cult moments that, you know, I guess dragged over 7 years, but they're slightly more spread out than they used to be. But for what we paid, as a going rate, it's what, like 12 million or something?
Yeah,
it's played everywhere for us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think time will be remembered a lot more fondly when it's over, I think.
It is quite nice, actually, given that we obviously scrapped winners and losers last year, because it was poor old Schlappy got lumped into losers quite a lot. It is really nice to be sitting here talking so positively about a guy that's played over 200 games for us, played his heart out in most of those, and seems to be a very nice, humble guy. And I think it's really nice to finally give him the sort of the praise he deserves, because, and a banger as well. Absolute banger. Bit of admin to end part one, Jack. Can we talk about Oldham again, if we want to?
Hey, look, if we have the need to talk about Oldham in the first half of next season, then I can't actually imagine any circumstance where that would come up. But hopefully we're not talking about Oldham as we kind of approach next spring, because that chat is not for anyone with aspirations of where we want to be this time next season.
That was from William Thomas. The fine for the O word now is off the table, given we are safe. Just the R word now. Right. Lots covered in part one there, lads. Top work, two games. Let's take a quick break and come back with questions. Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. It's part two. We're going to talk about the Palace women securing the championship title in a minute. But before we do that, Joe is down the Wikipedia rabbit hole. And just tell us listeners what you're just saying off air for a second there.
Yeah, just in checking the Jeffrey Schlupp Premier League appearances for Palace, I've just got a list in front of me of the leading appearance holders in the Premier League for Palace over the years. And there are what look to be sort of 20, 25, quite a lot of players have hit the century in the Premier League for Palace. I think seven are currently in the squad. Can you name them?
Do you want to play Wembley here, Jim?
Do you want to?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Has Eze done 100? Eze must have. He's been I'm going to say Eze.
Can't believe that's where you're starting.
He has got 109. He's right towards the back end. So, yes, that's one.
Bit bold.
With the ear injury, that was bold.
Yeah, that's what. Jordan Ayew.
Jordan Ayew is fifth in the all-time Palace Premier League appearance.
Oh, that's a great shout.
192.
Jordan Ayew. Tyrick Mitchell.
Tyrick Mitchell's in there. 129 at the time of recording.
Yeah, I'll take
level with Kouyaté.
He's wrong. I wouldn't have thought he'd have had that
one behind Damien Delaney. That's the biggest shock, I think.
I'll take the low hanging fruit of Joel Ward.
Yep, top of the list, 303 appearances.
That's mad.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize we were doing. In that case, I'll go James. Oh no, not current. I didn't say it. I said James Mack. I didn't finish it. Current. Who plays for Crystal Palace? Has he done 3 years, 21, 22. Joachim Anderson.
He is last on the list, just broke in at 101. So I think the Newcastle game would have been his 100.
Oh my word! I'm really pushing.
That was the one I was most surprised to see on there.
Actually. Yeah, he's just ticked over. Okay,
two more on there.
James Tompkins.
Correct.
Oh, very good.
There you go. Just 124. Mitchell's already overtaken.
That's mental. He's been here longer than Jeffrey Schlupp and Jordan Ayew.
Yeah, he's eight years.
He came here after the cup final, didn't he, that summer?
Before that, I think. No, wait. No, you're right. Yeah, August 2016. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, same summer as Andros, yeah.
Him and Ben Teke. No.
Yeah. Does that mean there's one left?
There's one left.
Yeah, and with the reason we've got to the list.
Schlupp.
Jeffrey Schlupp, yes.
Oh, Jeff, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Phew. I was thinking there, Nathaniel Clyne hasn't played over 100 games for us in the Premier League.
But... No, he's way down in 67. The next that are going to hit the century...
Oh, hang on, that's a good one.
welcome to footballpalacenerds.com.
You tell the season end is approaching.
Who
is it
next?
Mark Gay.
It is 95.
Yes, of course.
I worry he may not hit that century, but hopefully
yeah, I think he might be very close to it. But
yeah,
and but a question about that actually. That's maybe
yeah. And then joint on the same number of appearances, which does reflect their time at the club. Edouard and Mateta both have 90 Premier League appearances for Palace.
Wow, I wouldn't
is one or the other. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Yeah. God, of course.
Michael Olise on 12 or something.
I'm about to say, yeah.
79, the same as Nigel Martin.
Love that. Oh, what a pair that is.
I mean, Martin obviously played a couple of years. God, it feels like Martin played so many more games than that in the,
yeah,
well,
you,
the Premier League.
Yeah, you laughed about James Tompkins. Jaro Riedewald is on 78. So
he... that is crazy. When he came on the other day, has he made 100 appearances for the club yet?
No, great. We looked at it last week and it was 96, wasn't it, or 94 or something.
That is...
Blimey.
That would be the best earned testimonial if he gets to 10 years and has made 111 appearances for the club. 2017, yeah.
Yeah, it's 94 currently.
That is unbelievable.
There are, yeah, another one that might actually not make his century, sadly.
I appreciate the game.
Yeah. Yeah,
fair play.
Fair play.
Why would you want to play in League One when you don't have to?
Yeah.
Just be the squad clown. Just be the guy that makes everyone feel happy.
He is absolute vibes, man.
Oh, massively. Listen,
if he was a toxic presence in the dressing room, he would have been
gone. But he clearly is the opposite. It's clearly the opposite of that.
And it's the same that when Mateta wasn't getting runs in the side, what you would hear was actually
a
really good presence in the training ground. So
I think I get the impression that this current squad, there's quite good vibes. Not really knowing any of them, but do you know what I mean? It's like... least amount of toxicity, I think, in the squad that we've probably had for a while. They seem like a good, vibey squad. And I'll never say that again, because I'm 40 next month. Let's move on to... Well, Palace Women, promoted to WSL, Jack, as champions. We thought it might happen. We hoped it would. 0-0 draw against Sunderland did confirm it at the weekend. Largest crowd for a Palace Women's game at Selhurst. Nearly 7,000, I think it was, in the end. Lovely scenes at the end of them lifting the trophy, the flags and the crowd. Yeah, what an achievement. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and Rob and I have talked about that on one of the daily pods this week, and Rob did a pod after the game.
Rob's post-match pod is lovely. That's free to listen, isn't it?
Yes, that is on the main feed, yeah.
Yeah, listeners should go back and listen. That was absolutely lovely to kind of bask in the glory there and then. I mean, we'll focus on Palace in a minute, but it is just an added charm to it that Charlton were second and lost by a point, just to kind of add to it, because they weren't really anywhere. It was all about Palace versus Sunderland, but Charlton got excruciatingly close from their perspective. But fantastic, you know, we've talked about it at length over the last few weeks, but fully appreciate we've been late to the party. Many other Palace fans are a lot more familiar with the team and the season as a whole this year. But just to get kind of the analysis that this club and this team is probably 3 years ahead of where they wanted to be.
Yeah.
And the players that are joined and committed to that kind of longer term project, what a reward for them that they're going to be playing against some of the best players in the world next season. But it's a hell of a gap between the Championship and the WSL, and you know, those that have listened to the pod and those that will listen to Rob's pod, you'll get an insight as to the degree of planning that now needs to be implemented, you know, when you hear back from Lee Nicole and Adam Jeffrey. So, really interested to see how they take next season. Steve Parish has said all the right things. I'm just intrigued now to see what happens at the next step. But Bristol City, I think, with a club that went up, they're going to come straight back down. I think they've only managed to win 3 games this season. It is a big gap to bridge, but it sounds like the club are going to do all they can to bridge that gap as best they can. So I'm really excited. But for now, let's just bask in the glory of the first title lift at Selhurst by a Palace team since 94, I'm guessing. So, yeah, fantastic.
There was a youth team title lift 2 years ago.
Okay.
But, I mean, still great. I'm actually... You know, Joe, when the men's team get promoted and people are like, oh, we'll get to see Haaland at Selhurst, we'll get to see whoever at Selhurst. I hope that when they play some of the bigger teams like Arsenal and Chelsea and that, we're going to see the likes of Leah Williamson, Beth Mead, Sam Kerr, world-class players at Selhurst. That is genuinely really exciting to think that this Crystal Palace, who only turned professional 2 years ago, are now going to be up there battling against the best players in the world, who we've seen on TV in the tournaments for the last couple of years. And it is going to be difficult. Bristol City struggled this year. But as Griot said on the post-match pub with Rob, there's only one spot going up, which means there's only one spot going down.
Yeah,
which actually does increase your chances of staying up. So lots to prepare for, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, I thought the same when after the Fulham game, coming out of the ground, went to a pub in Putney and a sports bar, and I think Everton Brentford was on, but also on sort of the same amount of screens was the Chelsea Barcelona second leg, or certainly the European fixture that they had. And it's not just about those players coming to Selhurst to see that game. It's also got gigantic followings they bring with them as well. You're going to see some really impressive crowds when they are able to play at Selhurst anyway. And I guess particularly in the case of, say, Chelsea, if there are fixtures that it may end up making more sense to play them at Sutton's ground, and actually, because that's just, it's a big Chelsea country around there, actually, from the people I know around there. So, yeah, very interesting. And yeah, I suppose in terms of the challenge next season, it'd be very interesting to see, you know, there are lots of platitudes made and all the right things being said. How badly do you want it, Crystal Palace board? How badly, can you put your money where your mouth is in terms of how much do you want this to succeed? How much is it just a sort of very convenient thing on the side? Put your money where your mouth is and let's see how big we can make this thing, how sustainable we can make this, and steer them towards long-term success. That WSL TV deal on its own is only ever going to grow, I think. It could be very much become its own thing, bigger than it is now. So let's rise to that challenge and see. It's a totally new adventure. I have a feeling shades of that promotion in 2012 for the men's side, just seeing that.
I said that.
Or 2013. Just actually, you can see how transformative this could potentially be. It's not just coming up to another division. This is really something a bit more significant. And let's hope we make the most of it.
Promotion is always well-timed, but this does seem especially well-timed.
Yeah.
I think that TV deal that Joe's talking... Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, you and Rob talked about that on one of your daily pods. Like, it's true, though. Like, I think that TV deal's up for renewal, if not this year, the year after. So even if Palace were to go down next season, if they're able to use the resources now available to them to then, you know, look at them returning a year later, it is good timing. The women's game is only growing. The media coverage, the TV deal specifically, is only going to get bigger, as Joe says. So, yeah, the club now have a decision to make, and we all hope they make the right one.
Well, I think, I mean, on that, Steve Parrish did a sort of open letter on the website during the week about the women's team and pretty much sort of set out the fact they are going to back them, that this is a big opportunity, and that they are going to back them all the way. So I think he sort of nailed his colours to the mast a little bit there.
We're going to the next level. Is that what he said?
Well, he said something about the sun shining in the morning or something.
Maybe the mistake was he never specified which part of the Palace, which part of the club he was specifically referring to. When he said we're taking this club to the next level, he meant Crystal Palace women.
There's a career in PR spin for Joe Walker. Hey. That's quite something.
Brilliant stuff.
I mean, he did still need it when the video, the sort of congratulatory video on social media from Steve Parrish suggested he was in the stand, but it was, yes. And then he was photographed not 5 minutes later courtside at a basketball
in
game
in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia with Oliver Glasner and Josh Harris, I believe, who has some ownership in the team.
He does, but yeah.
Oliver Glasner having a very sort of awkward sip from a cup of Sprite or something.
Like, Sprite.
Well, I don't know if I should have been photographed.
I mean, those courtside seats in the NBA, I guess at any basketball match, but they are about as close to the action as it gets. And he, you know, Josh Harris saved two very prominent seats for Steve Parrish and Oliver Glasner. You've got to think those are some important talks that are happening right now, because yeah. Steve Parrish maybe fairly got some grief for posting that picture, as Joe says, of suggesting he's in the stand only to kind of reveal that he's actually on the other side of the Atlantic within an hour. So it was an interesting one. But yeah, there's some serious talks happening in Philadelphia this week by the looks of it.
Yeah, Rob goes into this in one of the daily episodes this week on the Patreon as well, because it wasn't great optics considering what the women just achieved. And I understand where people came from that, but also Rob does go into explain sort of scheduling of meetings when it comes to prepping for next season and stuff. Being courtside at an NBA game is the least conspicuous you'll ever. Like, if you're at a Premier League game, you can sort of get away with it, maybe in a box or somewhere. If you're courtside at NBA, you're basically saying, "Please take a photo of me.
I'm here."
Yeah, I'm on telly for the next hour and some change. The what it did provide, if beyond all that, which for me anyway. I try to self-reflect as the season goes and moves and develops. Very vocal about ownership issues with us and how divided the ownership structure seems to be, how disinterested certain pockets of it appear to be. And that may yet prove to be the case, you know, from the outside looking in, it certainly did a few months back. Mm-hmm. It's good to see that Josh Harris still appears to have enough of an interest in the investment and this one particular sports franchise that we have felt has been long neglected, that he deems it necessary to fly the head coach and the chairman over immediately after a weekend game to presumably have a day or two of talks. You know, that's it sounds like everyone is still, you know, might not be on the same page, but are all trying to pull in the same direction.
They're talking. They're in the room.
Yes. Yeah.
Busy weekend for him as well. I mean, the Sixers, that's an NBA playoff match, I think. And also it was the NFL draft this weekend. And his
franchise. So many teams. So many
yeah,
teams.
His franchise, the Commanders, you know, had massive chips to play in the draft. So for Palace to be part of his focus of what was a very good weekend, I think, yeah, Joe's spot on to highlight that, because there were suggestions that they weren't talking to each other. There was a lot of conjecture that things weren't right, and that does indicate that things have improved. Whether that's the degree that we want it to, we'll see. We'll see what comes from those discussions.
You hope that actually plans for the women taking on the WSL were part of those discussions.
They quite possibly were.
They need to be. So, yeah. I mean, I'll start panicking when Palace start up a Barcelona-style basketball team. Alice Amble. We haven't done any questions in part two so far, so shall we do a couple of questions?
Chuck them in.
Talk about
Palace
we Ash.
We do sometimes get grief for asking questions and then not asking.
And then never. I know, sorry, it is, yeah, but hey, these are what the daily episodes are for, where we can talk about, because you know, an hour and a half a week. It's not enough time. Anyway, Palace Ash says, Eze leaves a bigger hole in our team squad than Elise. Oh, Ash, that's bold. If Gehi and Elise go for big money, we can build a very good team around the rest. Joe, I'm just going to throw that your way. Make of it what you will.
I did see once Ebbs was rested, or certainly not risked against Fulham, one of my first thoughts, I think I might have even tweeted it, was this would be an interesting comparison of this current side without Elise versus this current side without Ebbs. And I think we started equally explosive as we did against Newcastle, but the tiredness was, you couldn't overlook it. And Michael Elise in particular looked shattered at the end. And it wasn't a case of bad attitude or anything like that, but there were a few passes in his direction where towards the end he's kind of, I'm not chasing that, give it to feet. And you know, he's not long back. I'm not holding it against him. Do I think there have been many games this season without Michael Olise and Ebbs playing where Michael Olise's absence has been felt massively. But yes, if you were to measure against between the last week, the games across the last week or so, Ebbs's absence was more greatly felt in terms of the cutting edge, I suppose. But, you know, small sample size. It is crazy how often just neither of them have been around or just one has been around this season. I did think when we were talking about the Newcastle game, actually, when I do reflect on it, Will Hughes is still my man of the match, perhaps because of the low ceiling of expectation. But Ebbs' performance was actually ridiculous.
So good.
The kind of level of performance we know he's capable of gets a little bit of criticism, sometimes a lot of criticism if he hasn't hit that level yet, particularly if he's coming back from injury and takes a while. But when he's there, and he is there now, so good. Really, really good. And it's pulling out tricks and just staying in control of the ball in a way that's quite different to when Wilf's in his prime and the ball is going down that side. You kind of know that he's probably going to beat this person he's up one-on-one against, but there are other players coming to swarm in, or, you know, it's essentially one area of the pitch. He's not going to come marauding and controlling the game. And it's more about, can we get it over there to create a chance for somebody else? Ebbs, it's different, particularly as we're playing at the moment. He can really just take control of a midfield, have everybody clean up behind him, and then he'll just float. And he just seems like he's in control of the ball for absolutely ages, and could just, if his mind is set on it, he can just decide to win games. It's a quote that comes up a lot when I think about him. The Newcastle game was a really good example of, oh, Ebereze has decided to win this football match today.
Float is such a good, he really does. And there was a run against West Ham, I think it was against West Ham, where he just kept beating men. It was like a sort of video game. And the little characters just like, but it was like continuous. It just kept beating people. He's a joy. I mean, Wilf was a joy to watch as well, but Ebbs is like going to the ballet or something. He's gorgeous. Couple of questions, Jack, for you. Mm. Graham Burt was asking about contracts up and who you'd retain and let go. I don't know if that's maybe one for sort of a couple of weeks down the line, maybe. But,
well, as Joe said earlier, it sounds like some of that stuff's starting to filter out.
Yeah. Well, Palace have a weird, they didn't used to release contract renewals as news stories. So I don't know if we probably will via, I guess, Dom. These kind of things.
The other thing that happens increasingly, not just with Palace, but with other clubs, a lot of players, particularly at a certain stage of their careers, or anything from like 28 onwards, they're typically inserting clauses into the contract in terms of games played. So once they've met that target, it's an incentive and the contract's extended, or at least is liable to be extended upon all parties agreeing. So someone like James Tompkins probably has not reached any threshold this season, so there'll be a conversation about him. But you'd imagine Joel Ward, Nathaniel Clyne, Will Hughes may well have met. I mean, for Clyne, it probably was quite a low threshold. But his form since the new manager's come in and since he's been implemented as his third centre half, for what is a relatively low wage, it makes sense to kind of get him secured now before offers might come his way in the summer. So you probably will start to hear, you know, and Joe's referenced Matt Woosdom's article in The Athletic, then probably is a bit of a known secret in some regard as to who we'll see back when the players return in June, July.
Gyro also hasn't hit his mark, and his is only 5 games a season, and he still hasn't hit it. So
is he still under contract?
I don't. He's probably not even on a contract.
I think he's still under. But yeah,
I think the really telling one is
just let him come back. Just let him do what he wants. It's fine.
There's not even been a sort of sarcastic clamour for Nathan Ferguson's renewal. I think it just hasn't worked, has it? Bless him. It seems to be in squads playing, getting minutes in the younger
in the squad last night for the Spurs game.
That I'm not sure.
I don't believe so. No, I don't think so.
I don't remember seeing his name.
It has been very sort of sporadic when he has come back. It's never been like 90 minutes or anything like that.
And I think he might have had, I mean, you could say this, you know, every other month. I think he'd had another setback.
Oh, dear.
I don't know. That might be wrong, but I feel like I saw that mentioned in a group, random group chat with sympathetic messages from people. So
in terms of contract chat, I think maybe the more interesting discussions that we had will be about players like Odson Edouard. And by extension, Mark Gay and Joachim Andersen, who will both have 2 years left. I think Odson Edouard will have only 1 year left on his contract. He signed a 4-year when he signed in 2021. So probably right time to have that chat about Odson Edouard, you know, 3 years in. Some lovely moments, some nice bits, some very good goals. But yeah, he probably is behind Jean-Philippe Mateta in the running now. Almost no doubt about it.
We've got questions about Gaye, Elise, Eze. We'll probably come to those again. I want to ask you about Edouard actually going a bit off script. 3 years then, I hadn't realised it'd been that long.
Yeah.
Has Odson Edouard been a success at Crystal Palace 3 years in?
Yes, in that he's contributed to the continuation of top-flight football. No, in that he hasn't become that 20-goal-a-season striker that we probably hoped he did when he joined from Celtic and had maybe indicated his time in Scotland would lead to. I think he probably has underperformed. He's been unlucky with injuries, and I mean that in that injuries have struck him at the wrong time for him.
Yeah.
That as he's been in good frames of form, the injury has then hit him. He probably is one of the Palace players in the squad who could be replaced but still holds a value in terms of the transfer market. So depending on what the finances are this summer, it would make sense to see what the market was saying about Odson Edouard, I would say, this summer.
He's obviously second in command behind Mateta, Joe. That's a question we've been asking on the pod for the last 3 years, and that is a question that's definitely been answered now in terms of that pecking order. 21 goals in 96 appearances. Yeah, what do you reckon? Success or not?
There were a lot of sort of moments of hope for more there. I think maybe he was... Maybe one of the worst things that happened to him was that debut brace coming off the bench. Maybe just raised the level of expectation a bit beyond his capabilities, if you like. But I think the goals for the appearances, you have to factor in long spells wide, particularly really early. Yeah. I think covered Wilf there quite early on under Vieira and then just seemed to keep getting tried there. And I thought we played quite well in moments there, but lots of bitty sub-appearances, as would be the case with Mateta, actually. And towards the end, Benteke. It's just been that. To be a second choice at Palace up front is quite a miserable existence, I think. It doesn't seem to be very enjoyable. Quite often in recent years, chasing the game in a defeat.
Yeah, yeah.
We very rarely hear about and the sub striker came on to seal the put the gloss on a 4-0 victory. You don't really get that opportunity at Palace. I would never really disappoint with him. The consensus is quite capable technically. Mm-hmm. Maybe not built for the lone striker role in the Premier League. Maybe might have more joy in Liga or even a Championship. Although I suspect he might not want to go back down to that level. Had a lot of success in the front two, I think, at Celtic, and it's never really... There were some brief moments where him and Mateta have played together in a two, and he was often the scoring beneficiary in those. I'm feeling like I recall like a goal at home to Liverpool with the two of them together brought on.
Yeah. 2-1 defeat.
Yep, there's... was it at Villa Park this season? The two of them played together, and he scored there.
He did, yeah.
So that's perhaps a hit, but we just didn't have the depth to really...
Wolves this year with the two. Was it Wolves in the 3-2? Yeah.
Yeah.
Off the back.
Yes.
One. Yeah, yeah.
We just don't have... I just don't think we have the depth to seriously try that for sustained periods of time because they will both tire and then we have no one... Well, you see, we've barely had anyone to bring on up front all season. So he would go in my blessing. I wouldn't miss him necessarily the long way around to answer your question. I wouldn't miss him like in a way that I would. Even, you know, hasn't given us the same moments as a Jeffrey Schlupp, but that first season in particular, there were some really nice flashes. The debut goals against Spurs, the lovely goal at Arsenal.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's very nice. Some tidy finishes in there. But as you say, I think could get our money back for him, even despite that record. There will always be a newly promoted side or maybe someone else, maybe just hovering around the sort of Conference League level elsewhere in Europe or maybe above that, but might just fancy giving him a go, knowing that he will probably tear up slightly lower level.
What did you say the number was, Jim? How many goals in how many?
Well, it's really interesting. 21 in 96. Mateta, is 24 in 104. So a very similar record.
Yeah, but he's also 7-8, mate. So that's the reason why flavour of the month.
And his record this season much better. But Edwards' season by season record, and I agree, that first season I probably think was his sort of most profligate. His best record's this season. 8-28. Previously, he was 6-31, 7-37. So he's gone 6-7-8. He's had every decent season.
Every season he's had a burst. I think last season it was towards the first half. And again, I think when he was in favour under Roy's start this season, scored quite well. I mean, he was
a top scorer for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it made sense. But then would go on these. He was really unlucky last season. I think that goal at Leeds under Roy when he came back was his first goal in absolutely ages. He'd kind of just, the form had just disappeared between injuries and just out of favour.
I seem to recall at the end of September, we did a bit of maths, like his start to the season was so good that if he'd carried on that record, he'd have been close to a 20-goal season. Mm. But he didn't sustain that. He then got injuries and you can't really look at could be's and ifs, to be honest. But, I mean, my querying of his place in the squad is really based upon his contract status. And, yeah, I just wonder... That Mark Gay, I put the Mark Gay in the show notes, Jim, because I think that indication that was provided last week that he's not really entertaining any chats from the club about extending that, I think it probably cements the fact that he is the most likely to go. That's not to say others won't go, he was two, but I think I'm with Joe. I don't think we're going to see him make that 100 Premier League appearances for Palace, sadly, because that would require him to still be wearing red and blue next August.
You know, there's that meme of when he was playing for England, there's a break in play and he's like staring into space. That'll be me when Getty leaves in the summer, just thinking about the good times we had with him.
I haven't had enough of them. It's the right time for him to go. I get the club need to embed this model, but it's a shame that his last half a season with us will have been ruined by that injury picked up at Brighton, that we haven't seen him wear the armband more, be part of that back three, because he'd make that back three even better than it has been.
Definitely,
with Glasner. So, yeah, it's sad that his time at Palace may come to an end with a bit of a whimper. But here's hoping we see him for two or three more times at the very least.
Well, in typical sort of FYP stuff, the idea of typical Palace, I think, is it's a ever moving thing. It's an idea that can change and develop, and new law and new traditions can be built under that banner. I think this season what we're seeing is players we're expecting to leave having injuries that keep us here. It's this weird Stockholm. This, like, you can never leave. Someone, the physio is just kind of hitting their legs with a rolling pin when they're not looking.
Still California.
There is an outside chance that Gay's just not risked until maybe end of August because they're not sure of his fitness.
Then it's too late. We can't sell him. Can't get a replacement. Yeah. We go again. No.
Yeah.
Well,
Rob and I talk about that on yesterday's, by the time this comes out, daily on ingoings and outgoings, but particularly outgoings. So actually, the options of places for Mark Gahey, even maybe for an Elise, are quite limited in terms of players where it's a big step up, will improve your international credentials, you will play, and they have the money to meet Palace's. I mean, his is different because the contract situation probably reduces that a little bit, but we narrowed it down to basically sort of Man United, given the journey they're having with the new owner, et cetera, et cetera. But none of it's set in stone yet. So
no. Well, that's the thing with the model. The market also has to be there.
Yeah. Exactly. That was a much more succinct way of what I tried to say.
Yeah, it's PSR is kind of...
Yeah.
As much as it works in our favour in other ways, it gives and it takes away.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, let's wrap up questions there. We will ask more next week. Apologies, guys. But there's plenty of weeks coming up to discuss transfer stuff. So don't you worry. We'll be covering that. After the break, we're going to pick a very tricky 3-2-1. Welcome back to the Fight With Band podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. It's time for 3-2-1, and our listeners, Jack, are not envious of the situation. Rob McCormack Carpentry, Newcastle 3-2-1, he's put 3 SDO to Hughes. What a performance. I would say over the two games, I think Hughes is going to get some mentions. Neil Steer says, how good was Hughes against Newcastle? So I'm going to go to you first. In fact, I'll go last, guys. I'm happy to take the last one. We're combining both games, and not just Newcastle, Fulham as well. Jack, you can have the opening bid.
Yeah, I probably am going to just ask parts if we can double up and do two games. But yeah, I probably am going to go Will Hughes because I was just so pleased for him. And his performance warrants it on Wednesday night. He was absolutely exceptional in a midfield that contains a bloke who, you know, could be in demand for around £100 million in Bruno Guimaraes, who did actually show some very nice touches. I enjoyed his performance last Wednesday too, but Will Hughes was absolutely outstanding, and it built upon a very good performance against West Ham. Thought he was really good at Anfield. So for me, I'll put forward Will Hughes. Didn't perhaps play as strongly against Fulham, but still, as Joe said, thought he was really influential in that first half an hour. And he's providing a real nice balance next to Adam Morton. So I'll go Will Hughes. Yeah.
Joe, I've had to say ridiculously, maybe not, given that he hasn't really... he has found his form under Glasner, maybe didn't feature as much. He's turned on 3 points, usually, for the season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it seems low.
I guess that is reflective of... there was a horrible run earlier in the season where whenever he would come on, we would then concede goals. And
yeah,
some of that was attributed to him. Not unfairly, particularly some of the tracking back. But then he was being, you know, we saw him play really advanced positions sometimes. It just symbolically was really... just not very exciting when you see we line up against sides with Will Hughes in the 10. But there have been a couple of... hopefully this is the start of the reborn Will Hughes. You know, the Will Hughes that people playing Football Manager 10 years ago thought that Will Hughes would become. And
the wonder kid.
Yeah, the flashes have always been there. And Jack's always made it very clear point to highlight how tidy he actually is on the ball. I don't mean that's ever been in question. You can see why he was so highly rated as a youngster, and he's been showing that. He's been a match for everybody he's been playing against. I'm really enjoying it. There's still signs of the Hughes that we've known over most of his time at Palace. There's a horrific yellow card in that Fulham game.
Oh yeah,
but I've really enjoyed it, and I'm really pleased for him. You know, it must be horrible when you feel like you're contributing to a bad run, not just being part of a team that's on a bad run. When it all feels like it actually part, you know, when you come on, games go the other way, Luke, go away from us. So I'm really happy that he's actually been a significant contributing factor, way more positively, and in the space of, particularly in the last fortnight, probably has played his way into whether or not there were appearance related clauses in his deal. I don't think anyone would be unhappy with him as long as he was happy with the role that he will have to continue next season. That there'll probably be a place for him in a squad where there might not have been a few weeks back.
I think the manager will see a conscientious, tidy on the ball midfielder who's happy to get amongst it. And for the type of football that Glasner clearly wants to play, whether or not Will Hughes starts many games next season, he's certainly the type of player that he'd have to go and replace if he wasn't here next season. So I think it makes perfect sense for him to stay. And yeah, the last fortnight especially has been great to see him kind of viewed in a different light by a lot of Palace fans.
Coffee Club needs it as well.
Apparently so.
he's had the biggest fortnight of any Palace player in the squad in the last 2 weeks, so undoubtedly. Ridiculously, he's level on 3 points in 3-2-1 with Mateus França, the Palace fans, and Roy and Ray, I think we mentioned the other week. So I think he deserves to move out of that company. Joe, do you want to nominate? And we haven't done the numbers yet. Do you want to nominate another player then?
I'll take a low-hanging fruit. I'll take another good week for Adam Wharton. The Newcastle... I don't even think he was the standout against Newcastle, but I think particularly the Fulham game is just... following up from that has just made me want to put him forward. The risk of kind of repeating ourselves, because he seems to come up every single week since he's... particularly since the first couple of games, once you got that Brighton appearance out of the way... very tidy, very busy, great in the tackle. Someone asked me on Twitter, please forgive me if you're a listener, because I forgot your name, said, have we seen a sort of better passer at Palace? And I could only answer in my lifetime, of course. But I was thinking, has the sort of metronomic passing and tough tackling of Kabai when Kabai was on song.
Yeah,
but he seems to have a really direct through pass, and as well that I can think Mateta against Man City. I'm thinking Elise's big chance against Fulham, which he should have put away.
Eze away at Forest.
Yeah, these are like really defense splitting from quite deep.
Yeah.
Even the pass to Jeffrey Schlapp on Saturday is through the lines.
Easiest assist.
Yeah, 100%. But it is that forward pass. He's always looking up. He's just got that in him. I agree. Yeah.
Well, it's forward thinking. Having a midfielder like that who can play, who is forward thinking, which I don't think we've had, you know, for some time, that is looking to pass through the lines. It's refreshing and it opens up the pitch.
I mean, in fairness, Luka did try and make that pass a million times. It just never really happened.
Hey, but it's teams move on, clubs move on, and we've looked like we've if that's our Luka replacement, brilliant, you know.
I thought that's who you're going to mention. He's been fantastic. I think he's going to slightly get into that category of so good you won't notice him unless he plays a 10 out of 10 in the way that Wilf used to, not comparing him at all,
or an Ebbs as we kind of touched on earlier.
But just like, so you forget he's so good because he's just always at an 8.5. And again, only being 20 is
preseason conditioning to come as well. He's going to look really different, I think, at the start of next season.
Someone in one of the WhatsApp groups drew a Steven Gerrard, young Steven Gerrard comparison.
That crew cut.
It's the crew cut, I think. Yeah, it's the crew cut.
I've seen some sort of interesting other sort of the bigger clubs in the country going, fans going, should we go in for him this summer? And I appreciate that he's drawing that kind of interest. It's good for us generally. And he's only been here that long that I don't think clubs would do. If they were to, it would have to be a farcical amount of money. And I kind of would go with my blessing if it was those kind of figures. So how good it's been.
I don't think any sort of level-headed director of football is seriously looking to sign him this summer. I think they give him all another year at Palace. And
good job there's a load of not level-headed directors of football in the Premier League.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah, those famously level-headed.
Hi, Todd Bowley. Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, fair point.
Is he still their chief football operating officer? I don't know.
I think he's resigned. I think he's stepped down to another role now.
Gave himself his resignation.
He's like when Rod Nodes was Brentford chairman, manager, CEO.
I think he's a wonderful player, but I do think there's a chance that next summer they might all be knocking.
I can see
that.
If he continues on this trajectory, then I think that's,
Whether or not we'll stick to this bet, but would anyone take a 20 quid bet regarding Adam Wharton playing 100 games for Palace or not?
So what's your net? He's on 12. He's on 12.
All comps?
I'll give you all comps.
We're going on a cup.
I'll give you all comps. I don't think he'll make triple figures for Palace.
He's currently 12 Premier League. 12 all comps because we're obviously out of the cup by the time he's home.
Of course.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't.
One more to go. I actually think this is actually one of the easiest ones I've ever decided. And I'm glad you guys went first and took the obvious ones. Loads of great performances, and we've mentioned lots of them. But for the goal, I'm going to give Jeffrey Schlupp a point. Because you will not see a sweeter shot hit this season, possibly ever at Selhurst. We've talked before about how nice it is to be giving him credit when he deserves it. I think he 100% deserves, and he's only on 5 for the season as well. So let's give Schlappy some love. I mean, he can take the one.
It is lovely to give Jeff Schlapp love for one goal, but the fact we're not giving any love to JP for two goals, you know, that's questionable.
The conspiracy theories are out.
Yeah, they're coming. Yeah, we've got no defence this week. I'm sorry, guys. We want a last week of the season decider. That is on the record, listener.
Well, we're not going to... depending on what you guys want to give Wharton, he's not going to eat much. Wharton is 13 points behind
Lerma.
I
thought Jefferson Lerma had a really good week, actually. So if that bridges the gap slightly, then...
Tate's 10 point. Nah, it's not. I think it is JP.
What I would say, to throw ourselves some hay, Mateta's performance against Fulham...
Yeah, dropped off.
Really, actually quite an entertaining battle with... it's a Diop, I think who came in for Fulham, and really they actually, I wouldn't say handled him, but stifled some of the better work that we'd seen in previous weeks. It was someone that really met his physical match and a lot of our best work on Saturday came elsewhere. So maybe that marks a bit if we're doing an average across the two games.
Yeah. Is it fair to say, though, that that could be taken as a positive, that clubs are taking JP as a proper threat, that they're doing jobs on him?
Yeah. It shows improvement.
Go on, Jim, give the points out. It's on you.
Well, one for Schlupp, and then we got to decide the two and a three for Hughes and Wharton. I've personally got it down as three for Wharton, two for Hughes, but I'm happy to be...
I was ready to go three for Hughes, actually.
Who's our friend?
It's up to you, then.
Well, I'll give it to our mate who said Hughes should have the three. We're a democracy.
That was Rob McCormack. Yeah, go on, then.
Cheers, Rob. You get the nod.
You've got the nod. So three for Hughes, two for Wharton, one for Schlupp. That takes Hughesy up to... I can't even see his name. Six, up to six. Wharton up to 14, joint third already after 12 games.
Extraordinary.
And Schlappy up to six as
can
well.
Can I just say before we end, I appreciate we need to move on. We are doing Tariq Mitchell a bit dirty at the moment. I think, is Tariq on five still?
He is on, five.
Sorry, Ty, if you're listening.
Yeah. It's a flawed... Look, guys, we're not saying it's a perfect system. It is a flawed system, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know...
I mean, in the same breath that Ty's on five, which I believe is lower than the fans or whatever you just said a minute ago.
No, fans are on three. What happened?
In the same breath, Tariq Mitchell is also playing himself onto the long list of possible deputy left wing back for the Euros this summer. Just putting it out there. He's improved so much over the last 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
And the dearth, I think Joe called it, after he went and saw England against Brazil. The dearth at left back or left wing back. I don't know. There's a chance.
There were not insincere shouts of the appointment of Glasner of this might be an ask too far for Tariq Mitchell in terms of his style of play, what that might bring. Are we going to perhaps have to look in the transfer market for not an alternative to Tariq Mitchell in terms of depth, but actually a replacement? And I think that's just been quelled so quickly by him, which is a testament to him.
Yeah.
I don't think it comes as naturally as it does to Daniel Munoz, but I don't think that necessarily matters. I think what's key is that he is involved in so much of the work up high in the pitch, and so much of us winning the ball high, recycling the ball and putting the pressure back on the opponents. He's been a big part of that. And I think that's all praise due to him, because...
He looks more confident. He looks more confident with the ball at his feet. Yeah.
He won the ball really high. I said it on the post-match pod to Rob in the first half, I think, at Fulham. And I was like, oh my God, Tariq Mitchell was winning the ball in their final third. It's great. It's not used to it, but obviously a product of the new system. I'm on 90min.com and they're talking about left backs for England and stuff. Oh my God, it's not a strong. Luke Shaw, number one, like injury prone.
Yeah.
Ben Chilwell, number two, barely played.
Horribly out of form at the moment as well.
Yeah. Joe Gomez, number three, not first choice at left back for his club. Tariq at four. Dan Burn at five, not a left back, centre back.
Stop the list.
Alfie Doughty at six, about to get relegated.
And
Rico Henry at seven, who I actually say would be...
He hasn't played... He's currently got a cruciate ligament. Ligament right now.
Yeah, otherwise, I think he would be right in it.
He's right there, yeah.
Not to go too off topic, but the sticker albums for the Euros are out now. And Panini have lost the contract. And I've come to understand that this means that Panini hold licenses to a lot of the big clubs... And players. And so this new company or alternative company that have got the rights to the sticker album, it's been put out, but there are no Man United players, no Arsenal, no City players.
Wow.
So the England side has a Sheffield United left back on it. Yes. I can't even remember his name.
What?
Robinson.
Yes. Ebbs is in there.
Because they're
basically scrambling for players that don't have very unlicensed kit shots. It's just them in very bad Photoshop. Everybody that doesn't play for a big side, and they're listed as this is England's cream of the crop.
I thought you were going to say it was going to be like a version of that on a social media, particularly on Instagram, when you see people having to list one player per club, and then they're left with left back, and it's like Robinson from Sheffield United.
It's basically the Pro Evolution Soccer version of stickers, isn't it?
Von Mistelroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, you Great Britain
whites. Oh, actually, I shouldn't be saying that.
Don't say that.
So, yeah, no Saka, no Foden, no Rashford, no Stones.
Oh my God.
Mark Gay, Ebere Eze, Tomori, Callum Wilson, Rico Lewis, who may end up actually featuring. Luke Thomas is the player. I'm sorry, not Sheffield United player. Luke Thomas.
Uncapped
at Leicester City. He's been put in there because they obviously were just scrambling for people that are eligible. Just doesn't seem worthwhile at that point. But hey, that's sticker albums are not my game anymore.
Joe's or Panini sticker albums are not their game anymore.
Wow, that's... I used to do sticker albums as a kid. I kind of want to do it to get the Joe Thomas. I feel like that's going to go down as a cult.
Joe Thomas is one of the actors from The Inbetweeners.
Well, there's more chance of him getting called out than Luke Thomas.
Probably.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, right, so it's 3 points to Hughes, 2 for Wharton, 1 to Schlupp. That is 3-2-1 done for the week. Quick break when we come back. Man United at home next Monday. Welcome back to the £500 podcast, sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. Monday night, Man United coming to South London, Jack. Mateta is the generational talent. At Mateta is the GOAT. We still haven't worked out that, as he is JP tweeting. Quite simply, do we go into United expecting a win? Over to you.
I echo Joe's point earlier. I'm very confident. I'm frustratingly, I'm unable to attend on Monday nights because I have a nice break. To look forward to, but I am sad I'm missing it because I think we're going to give them a really good game and I quite fancy us against it. It seems mad to be like, oh, we're overdue a win against United because we actually beat them 2 years ago on that last day of the season, but I feel like we might actually give them a proper going over. That is literally the last 2 weeks talking.
Yeah, it is big time.
It doesn't matter. Like, I am really excited to see how we go against them. I think we are their worst nightmare right now. I watched... for some reason, I watched a long highlights thing of theirs against Burnley, and Burnley were really good against them. But that's because United let them be really good against them.
I know, and I kept them in that until he did.
Yeah, made some really good saves. I mean, I also watched United against Burnley a couple of Saturdays back, and again, Burnley would have been fully within their rights to have taken the 3 points in that game too.
Oh, you mean the Bournemouth draw?
The Bournemouth game, yeah. Sorry, yeah, Bournemouth one. The fact they're as high in the league as they are is really surprising because they've been terrible for big parts of this season.
Yeah.
But they've got some incredible talents in that playing squad that can turn it on. You know, Garnacho is very good. I think he's going to become a real star. I hate him, but Bruno Fernandes has got moments of genius.
Yeah, he's done good for
him. But no, I fancy us. I think that high press, the comfort on the ball that we've got, I think will frustrate them. And provided defensively we kind of keep to the level that we have been, particularly since the Liverpool game, why not? I do quite fancy us on Monday night.
It is very much the cocktails corking. The cocktails corked. Oh, my God.
You've had cocktails, clearly.
Yeah, the cocktails are talking.
Oh, my God. It's been a long time.
There's your episode title this week.
The cocktails...
The cocktails are caking, or whatever you just tried to say.
It's a tongue twister. It's the cocktails talking. Well, that is a tongue twister. Say that 10 times after cocktails. But I'm all for it, Joe. And actually, a chance to do the double over them. Because I've completely forgotten that we'd beaten them
this season
with Joe's belter, which is also listed for goal of the season. There's never a better time than Palace being safe. Under the lights on a sort of early summer's evening. So it's got all the elements of Palace, you know, maybe having a lovely shock result.
Yeah, we're allowed to be drunk on Palace's form and performances recently.
Yeah,
totally.
Exactly.
And Jack mentioned that victory, which kind of finally broke our duck, a home hadn't beaten them at home in the Premier League at Selhurst. That was on the last day. And it was a little bit of a mercy. They put out quite a poor team, but I think we started Rakitić that game, for example. We weren't full strength either. But it was quite a comfortable win. That was the end of the Ragnik era. I think Ten Hag was even in the stands. they're sort of almost approaching a similar position at the moment, aren't they? Not quite as near the end, but not far away. And I mean, looking at the sort of last month of fixtures, dreadful against Brentford, lucky to get away with a point. Lost against Chelsea, which takes some doing recently. Poor in that, you know, Bournemouth draw, gettable through three goal lead away against Coventry City. Beat Sheffield United. Yeah. Sheffield United took lead twice in that game.
Yeah.
And then the Burnley draw at home. I don't want to get cocky. They're still a team that will show up in big games because that's just that what that team is like. I don't think Palace away is the game that they think, right, this is Manchester United. I don't think they do that. And they've got players missing.
Say it properly, Joe. Say it properly.
It's just Manchester United. So good.
But they've got their, Casemiro at centre-half alongside Maguire at the moment. It's not natural to him, and it's shown. And, you know, his kind of presence is then missed in midfield. They relative to some of the teams we've played in the last few weeks, they've not got much bite at the other end of the pitch at the moment.
Do they need anything, though, Joe? Do they need to actually... I'm looking at the table. So they're in the Europa League spot.
Yeah,
Is that Europa League?
Yes. They fall out of the Europa League spots. They're a point ahead of Newcastle, who are outside that. And then they would fall in the Conference League. It doesn't look like they're anywhere near... Well, they're not going to get the Champions League spot. But looks like they're sort of 7 points away with three... Well,
They're 13 points off. They're 13 points off fourth, and fifth won't be enough for a Champions League space.
I was looking at it the other way around. Oh my God.
Their goal difference is plus one, 34 games in. Like, that is incredible.
Way lower than anyone else in the top.
Newcastle, who are a point below them, are plus 19.
Wow.
I mean, Jesus, that is. I haven't quite realised that is. Yeah. Okay.
They're incredibly poor for them. They are less than the sum of their parts, let's say. And I think if not now, then when, with regards to a good Palace side, informed, confident, not complacent, ready to outrun Newcastle, outrun Liverpool, we are going to give our best shot against them. And it might not lead to what we think it does, but I can't imagine us giving anything other than a good account of ourselves on Monday. Hopefully you're not too hungover from your bank holiday Sunday, listener, because I think you want to be awake for this one. I think you want to be...
Love that.
You want to see this.
Provided that some listeners may be... Is it the National League playoff final this Sunday as well?
Yes, Bromley are playing at Wembley on Sunday.
So given, I dare say, we might have a couple of...
Crossover.
You know, twin club
fans
who may well be doing that on Sunday. It could be a busy weekend for you, listener.
Yeah. I really hope it happens.
I didn't go to that end of season win a couple of years ago because I was on holiday. I suspect quite a few people the same. But I've never seen us beat United at home in the Premier League. It should be said, they have some big game players, or big moment players, I should say, like Fernandes could take the game by the scruff of the neck and win it if he wants to. And Garnacho, before the last two games, has been in really good form and slightly dropped off, but has had a good season. So it won't be easy. But to be honest, if Palace come out like they did against Liverpool and City and West Ham and Fulham and really go for it first half an hour and give us some entertainment, I'll not really care about the result. But I'll take, you know, an exciting performance at home under the lights. That'd be lovely. That'd wrap up my weekend.
Poor sides have rattled them doing that, and so I don't see what will be change will change with us. What I'm hoping for is that you just give a good account of ourselves. This is the great audition. Let's see Adam Wharton play against Manchester United. I imagine that's actually, given where he's born and raised, what a tie he probably relishes, and some of equally. I think a lot still depends on, will we get Ebbs and Elise? Is this the game where they actually all start?
And then possibly even
a Mark Gay cameo in there. And then just give so much sort of maybe a false dawn or not, but just...
And Mark,
a sense of performance that could just make us go, oh, next season, whether or not that's actually happening. But
a Mark Gay cameo would be the most wholesome 20 quid you could spend, by the way. Yeah. He would be so kind of his time. It'd be like 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Hi, I've heard you going through. Just, Jim, I put him in the intro. We haven't actually spoken about Jez Rakczaki. I wonder whether he might.
Oh, no, we have.
He might feature.
What a teaser that was at the start of the pod.
If Lister, if you're still with us, there you are. You're rewarded. Mrs. Rakczaki. Yes, finally.
Pressing the 15 second button. When is it?
Bloody Jim Daly comedy. Yeah, great. I mean, we're talking the day after a hat trick in the under-23s against Spurs, a team that had lost two games this season. Like, it's a hell of a result for that team, and some other, you know, good performances. Danny Imre again, another good performance by him. Matarin again, I think against his former team. I think he came from Spurs, so it's nice for him to kind of be amongst the guys as well. But Jez stole the show, hat trick inside the first 60 minutes. Oliver Glasner spoke about him a couple of weeks ago and said, He's unfortunately behind some stellar names. I wonder whether he will maybe get some minutes between now and the end of the season. This manager to see him, and I think we are probably in a place where we're having the same conversation we were having at the end of last season about next season being a great chance for him to go and get a loan. It's one of my big regrets this season, the situation that he found himself in, the fact that he didn't get let go into a championship loan. And the clubs that were looking at him were the clubs that have been at the top of the championship all season. So it's a real shame he didn't have the season that we all hoped he would do. Fast forward to now, I think we're having the same conversations about him.
Yeah, it's a well-timed. You said it was your regret, like you were the director of football that didn't.
No, because it made so much sense for him to get a full year's worth of championship football, having had such a good season for a bang average Charlton team last year. The reason why he didn't get that was because we didn't supplement the squad in the way that we should have done.
Yeah, you had the Franca and the Lise injury at the start of the season going into the season. They probably still had an opportunity there to go and get somebody else.
Yeah, 100%. And they didn't. And I think their club will regret that in the short term, hopefully not in the medium to long term. But yeah, still a chance for him. I think somebody pointed out on Twitter earlier on that even by the end of next season, he'll still only be 22. So to go and get a full season.
So
to get a full season now, he will get minutes, and that line of championship clubs at the door will still be a long one this summer, because he's shown in just a glimpse against a very decent Spurs youth team that he's very, very capable. So be interested to see how Glasner uses him between now and the end of the Villa game.
A Mark Gahey cameo for 20 minutes. Jez showing his face at the end. And then Jairo Riederwald lifting James Tompkins onto his shoulders for a last-minute winner from a
corner. What would be better?
That is wholesome.
I'd probably respect it more if Jairo managed to influence the night without adding to his appearance tally, but somehow still doing something but remaining on the 94 appearances that he's made for Palace.
throwing the ball back quickly.
Yeah. Get the pre-assist.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Lads, it's been mammoth. But I've loved every second of it. So thank you so much, as ever, for chatting through various two Palace games, various topics, and a very interesting 3-2-1. I'll see you both next week. Oh no, Jack, you're away. So I won't.
I'm away. I'm stepping out next week. So interested to see how you go on without me. I'm half listeners. I'll thanking their Lord that I will not be there next week, but
I'll see if Jairo is available.
After BBS cheering, I can hear it now.
Snapping away.
Anyway, tune in next week.
Numbers for some reason much higher next week. I don't know why that was. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Plenty more chat on the Patreon daily episodes this week. Patreon.com/FYP podcast. Enjoy the rest of your week, Palace fans, and we'll see you after the Man United game next Monday. Goodbye. Podcast Network.